From the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Today on the program, it's Lancaster musician Leo DeSanto from the Vinegar Creek constituency. Leo joined me for a chat about the band's latest album, Don't Go Back in Time, which was recorded live to tape at Right Coast Studio right here in Lancaster County. And he lets us in on how the band organically formed over a half dozen years ago.
It was all kind of like explosions in a junkyard, you know. It just kind of flew together and stuck. It was supposed to be a one-off show.
Coming up, it's Leo DeSanto from the Vinegar Creek constituency, and we're skirting the curtain with Joanna Underhill from Creative Works of Lancaster. Joanna joins us each month with an update on the Lancaster area theater scene. But first, let's find out what's happening around the wood stove. Coming up this week, it's the Laura Cortese Trio along with Dietrich Strauss at the Community Room on Wednesday evening, February 27th. Dietrich is a Lancaster native who's been living and touring out of Boston for the past several years. He and Laura's string trio are currently on tour and will be making a rare appearance here in his hometown. Doors open for the BYOB event at 7 p.m. There's a suggested donation of $15 and all proceeds go to the musicians. It's the Laura Cortese Trio with Dietrich Strauss at the Community Room, 19 North Prince Street. That's directly above Prince Street Cafe on Wednesday, February 27th at 7 p.m. It's First Friday in Lancaster this week, and that means a ton of stuff going on. On Friday, March 1st, you can find our featured guest Leo DeSanto at the Ware Center from 6 to 8 p.m. for their First Friday performance series. You can also visit LancasterArts.com for a full list of participating arts venues and downloadable maps to help you take advantage of all that the Lancaster art scene has to offer. It's First Friday in Lancaster this Friday, March 1st. On Sunday, March 3rd, Pittsburgh singer-songwriter and friend of the Woodstove, Joy Ike, returns to Lancaster for a special CD release party at the Lancaster YWCA. That's at 110 North Lime Street. The show starts at 7 p.m. and includes special guest Kim Edwards. Tickets are $10. You can get them at the door. Here's Everything You Have from the brand new album All or Nothing by Joy Ike on Around the Wood Stove.
I turn these words over and over and over again. I've asked myself, are you ready to hear this again? I see you pushing and pulling and twisting and turning, trying to feed in. It's like no matter how old we get, we're always trying to fit in. All these things you clutter and collect, they look good, but they consume your mind, take all your.
Joanna Underhill is the Vice Chair of Creative Works of Lancaster. Each month she joins us for a look at what's going on in the Lancaster theater scene. We're skirting the curtain with Joanna Underhill on Around the Wood Stove. Joanna Underhill, welcome back to the program. It is late February. We are talking theater in March. It's almost spring.
Yes.
So what do you have for us?
Well, March is proving to be rich and bountiful in theater experiences. And the first one is March 7th, Creative Works of Lancaster is presenting a staged reading of the play Enemy of the People by Henrik Ibsen. He's Swedish. There's debate about how to pronounce his name.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah, exactly. It's a one-night-only event. It's free. It's at 7 o'clock, and it is at the Temple Shalom Shemayim on Duke Street. And I should be able to tell you that exact address, and I forgot to look it up.
We will link up in the show post.
There you go.
Put all the information about specifics. But it's March 7th.
Yes.
And what do we expect at a play reading from Creative Works?
So a play reading is, and it's a staged reading. So that means actors will have scripts in their hands.
Okay.
But they will be moving around. And there'll be minimal props. and costumes. But they're kind of exciting events. We've done two other staged readings in churches, and there's kind of a great immediacy to them because we do use the aisles and things like that, and it's okay. It's a unique experience because you're not sitting in a theater in the cushion seat with the gold, you know, gilt and the red velvet curtains. So I think you feel a little more present. And so this one is going to have a tie-in. There'll be a panel discussion afterwards. And how the play and the panel link together is the play is basically about a small town in Sweden that has discovered that its waters have healing properties, and they become a spa town. And they're very excited. They're going to bring in tourists. They're all going to make a lot of money when the doctor of the town discovers that the waters have been contaminated by the local tannery.
Mm.
And he writes up a report, and he's actually, among his immediate circle, is hailed as a hero. Even the newspaper editor said, oh, yes, we've got to expose this. You know, we're going to expose the board that runs the spa. But then the mayor's brother, the doctor's brother, who is the mayor, points out to his brother, but everyone else, going, you know, if we let this get out, we're ruined financially. It's too expensive to fix, and we'll lose the tourism. And we can't actually claim that the illness is actually being caused by the leakage into the spa. And this causes most of the town to turn against this doctor. So at one moment he was a hero, and by Act Two, he's an enemy of the people.
I see.
And so actually, director Lydia Brubaker and myself saw a play version of this in New York in the fall, and immediately became apparent it's just still very timely. So we're going to have a panel discussion on the fracking issue, but we really want to represent both sides, and we don't want it to be ganging up environmentalists versus, you know, the people who are drilling, or it's just a discussion of the benefits and the faults of both, whatever, because there's still a lot of debate. So
who serves on that panel?
We're still organizing that, but okay. We have a lead on someone who actually is a landowner, you know, sold his land and made a fair amount of money.
Okay.
And then some environmentalists, and we're hoping to get someone from the drilling industry as well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's going to be a rich evening.
Mm-hmm.
And the ticket price is right. It's free and open to
right
the public.
Right on, yes. We will take a Goodwill donation, but that's going to go to the Temple's Social Justice Committee for them to spend as they see fit.
Awesome. What else do you have for us?
All right. Well, then, opening the next week on March 12th and running through the 30th is A Chorus Line at the Fulton Theater. Now, The Chorus Line, a lot of people have heard of it. It was it's the sixth longest running Broadway show ever.
I've even heard of it.
Yeah. But the Fulton's going to reimagine it.
Okay.
It's mostly done... Now, it's recreated, the 70s version that Michael Bennett did, that everyone loves, that toured forever. It's kind of become sort of a period piece. Often when you see it, people are still in their very 70s outfits. Although there is a timelessness to it because we all go see Broadway shows. Well, we like to go see Broadway shows or big musicals, and there's a big chorus. So that's why it's still what the actor goes through.
Mm-hmm.
It's a backstage look sort of at what people go through to get cast in these shows. But director Mark Robin just wants to update it, and he's also going to re-choreograph it. Usually they rely on the original choreography, and they just recreate that. But Mark himself is a choreographer, so he's going to choreograph it himself and sort of tell his version of the story.
That sounds
Mark,
cool.
Yeah, and Mark's been in the business a long time, and he sort of lived this too. He came up through the chorus to become, you know, the director and artistic director he is now. So when they're going to reset, it's usually set on a bare stage, and they're going to set it in a dance studio. And it'll have updated clothing. And also, you know, there's a lot of story songs in it with the actors telling about events in their lives that led them to that moment. And they're going to illustrate that. Usually it's often them just standing there singing. There's a famous song at the ballet. And the Fulton's version will have a ballet happening, you know, in silhouette on the stage as the song is sung. So, yeah.
Details about that show and links to the Fulton to buy tickets will be on the show post for today's episode.
So the Fulton's also going to be producing another in their family series, and they're doing the children's classic Anne of Green Gables.
Awesome. I love those family shows that they do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're big hits.
Like Saturday mornings.
Mm-hmm. They're Saturdays 11. The ticket price is reasonable.
Very reasonable.
And it really is a great family experience. It's exciting when I'm in there to see the families come in and... It's a lot of, you know, it's first time theater for a lot of kids, so that's always exciting.
Have you worked on any of those shows recently?
Not recently. I was heavily involved in the children's tour they used to do, but they don't do that anymore.
Okay.
So, But they've always, history has a long, the Fulton has a long history of family and children's theater and doing a lot of outreach to the community that way.
What's going on at EPAC?
EPAC is doing, actually, kind of another big hit of the 20th century. This is a little later, Angels in America, and they're doing parts one and two, which is incredibly ambitious for a small community theater. It was, you know, it was hailed as sort of kind of the greatest play of its generation by a lot of people when it came out by Tony Kushner. It won Tony Awards, won a Pulitzer. And
when was that? When did it come out?
It came out in the late 80s.
Okay.
I remember I was in college when it came out. And it was an HBO movie, I think, about 10 years ago, too, that was also well received. And Tony Kushner gets a lot of buzz these days. I think he might have been nominated for an Academy Award for a screenplay for Lincoln, quite possibly.
All right. I'll buy that.
A little contemporary, you know.
Trivia?
He's still around.
Oh,
if you've seen Lincoln, you've seen Tony Kushner's work. So.
Very good. And when does that show open at EPAC?
That opens on March 7th. So the day after you go see the Creative Works production, you wanna make sure you get your tickets to go see Angels in America. And so the first part is March 7th through March 16th, and that's called Millennium Approaches. Part two is called Perestroika, and that's March 28th through April 6th. And they do tell me they actually have a deal. If you buy your tickets for parts one and two at the same time, your tickets for part two will be half price.
Awesome. Joanna Underhill is a longtime theater professional here in Lancaster. She is currently a teaching artist at the Fulton's Academy of Theater and vice chair of Creative Works of Lancaster. Learn more about the Academy of Theater at thefulton.org and keep up with our friends at Creative Works at their website, creativelancaster.org. Joining me at the Candy Factory in downtown Lancaster, Pennsylvania, it's Leo DeSanto from the Vinegar Creek constituency. Welcome. Thanks for coming down.
Thanks for having me.
I really want to talk about this brand new album. Leo DeSanto is the guitarist, lead vocalist, and primary songwriter for the Vinegar Creek constituency, a Lancaster-based string band that plays a real mix of American roots music from bluegrass to gypsy jazz to blues, rock and roll, and country. The longtime core band, which goes back over a half dozen years, includes Mark Rast on banjo, Pete DeVitri on fiddle, and Jeff Bryson on mandolin and lead vocals on a handful of his songs. The band formed organically over time right here in the Lancaster music scene.
It was actually a very different group of guys to begin with that were using the same name. My brother was in it, my brother Nick DeSanto, who plays in some different bands around town now, and some other folks. It was just kind of a rough collective that we would occasionally, when somebody would need an opening act, you know, for a show at the Chameleon or something like that, we'd get together and that was kind of the name, was just like a constituency, you know, just like a rough conglomeration that got thrown together now and again. But eventually, I guess when the band, the lineup really came around, I was asked to put together an acoustic opening act for the guitarist Larry Keel at the Chameleon. And a guy I was playing with at the time named Joe Ellis, gypsy jazz guitar player, and mm-hmm. He said, hey, I've got this great fiddle player that I play gypsy jazz with, and he's friends with this great banjo player. And I said, yeah, if you could get those guys, that would really help us out here. So I think the first time we played on stage together, our banjo player and I, Mark and I, had never even met face-to-face. Not only had we not rehearsed, we hadn't met. So he just kind of showed up the Chameleon with his instrument, jumped up on stage, opening for a national act, and there we went.
If there's a guy who could do that, though.
Yeah, sure. And he hung in there like a champ. Didn't even seem to be sweating about it.
Leo and mandolin player Jeff Bryson travel and play smaller local gigs as the Vinegar Creek Duo. Jeff's persistence is what landed him a full-time gig with the band.
That was kind of funny because, these guys would do different... We had a different mandolin player the first time we played. A guy named Evan Bates is a sound guy at the Chameleon. And I met Jeff at some picking parties around town, and he started calling me. He got my phone number from someone. He started calling me, and he's like, we should play together. I really feel like we should play together. I'm Jeff, that guy you met at the party. And I kind of thought there was something slightly offbeat about it. I thought, who is this guy? He's really convinced. And, you know, eventually, Another opportunity came along for the band, and our regular mandolin player wasn't around, so I called him back, and then from then on, he was the mandolin player. So it was all kind of like explosions in a junkyard, you know. It just kind of flew together and stuck. It was supposed to be a one-off show.
Here's one of Jeff's tracks. It's called "Gone" from the Vinegar Creek constituency on Around the Wood Stove.
I finished a beer with a bug at the bottom. I knew right away it was clear that I'd got him by the crunch that he made when he met with my teeth. Incised in half like a knife out of sheath. But he's gone, baby, he's gone. Gone, baby, he's gone. I protect you in ways, honey, way worse than that. But he's gone, baby, he's gone. The bug be inside, floating in an ocean of beer and saliva. You might think this happens more than most people think. Or maybe they don't, they just stand there and wait. But they're gone, baby, they're gone. Gone, baby, they're gone. Maybe they don't think you stand there.
I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Each week, we bring you interviews with artists and those who make the arts happen in and around Lancaster, Pennsylvania. If you like the show, please let us know. Drop me a line at jason@woodstovehouse.com with any comments, questions, or suggestions. The podcast is and always will be free, so if you really like the show, consider joining other supporters of the program and drop a few bucks in the tip jar to help us do what we do. The tip jar is located in the top right corner of our website, woodstovehouse.com. Today I'm talking to Leo DeSanto from the Vinegar Creek constituency. They've been around for a while. In fact, their first album is almost 5 years old. In January of this year, the band released their third album, Don't Go Back in Time. So you got this new record that was recorded at Wright Coast over in Columbia on the west edge of Lancaster County.
Yeah.
And this is a different process for you from the previous two albums.
Very.
Talk about that.
Yeah, well, the first two albums were made in our then bass player's basement. You know, he had kind of a rudimentary digital recording setup down there, and he had some experience with making records and, you know, in college and things like that. So we would kind of, you know, that was really experimental a lot of the time. We would just we did a lot of multi-track recording the way, you know, I guess a lot of digital recording is done these days, because you can do so much splicing and dicing and manipulating of things. So a lot of, and as a band, we hadn't really had the road time to really, I guess, become as tight as we wanted the songs to be. So a lot of times it would just be the songwriter and maybe, you know, bass, or maybe the songwriter and a drummer on occasion. We used my brother on a couple of those records. We'd just sit down and play the basic track like a lot of people do, and then overdub all the soloists and the instrumentalists, overdub the lead vocals. And what we kind of started, we made our first two records that way in 2008 and 2010, and we just heard the same thing over and over from fans, which was, you know, I really like your records, I really like the songs, but we don't get that energy that we get from you guys live. They don't, you know, your live performances have almost kind of this rock and roll type of, you know, energy to them, and the albums don't kind of convey that. And people would just inquire about it. They weren't necessarily complaining. They'd just say, you know, when are you going to make a record that kind of sounds more like you do? So I guess when this one came around, we started thinking a whole lot about how to do that, and the answer seemed obvious. Just do it totally live, no guest musicians, no overdubs, you know, no splicing and dicing. Just get us all in a circle in a room and play together the way the band started. So,
did you do multiple takes? I mean, were you just like doing the full take, do the full take, do the full take, then go back and listen and say which was the one we liked?
Yeah, and honestly, there weren't a whole lot of takes done on any of the songs. You know, I'd be surprised if we did more than three takes on very many of those songs at all. I mean, we did 14 songs in three evening sessions, you know, and the sessions were maybe 5 hours long. So, you know, we really just kind of, these songs had been, we'd been playing these songs on the road, and, you know, we're playing these songs live for some of them for as much as, I don't know, at least a year, the better part of a year. And we play more and more shows every year as a band now. So we were pretty tight on the arrangements. And of course, we did a lot of, you know, kind of pre-production, just making little recordings of them ourselves and making sure everything was arranged the way we wanted it to be. But yeah, we pretty much just went in and set up in a circle in a big room in the studio. And you know, Right Coast is a fantastic studio. The room sounds great. Their equipment sounds great. The engineer, Bobby Gentilo, that did the album is a master engineer. So we just kind of got everything so the conditions were right to capture it and just kind of rip through the songs. We'd, you know, Bobby would kind of, you know, play devil's advocate on whether or not we needed to do another take. He'd be like, well, how'd you feel about this? You know, mm-hmm. Give me one more, or no, stop there and come listen, or, you know.
14 songs in 3 nights.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think it was realistic. That's kind of what we were looking at, and Jeff and I were about to leave for a duo tour within a couple of days, so we really had to, it was kind of under the gun, you know. Yeah. We really had to get it done, and I don't know if any of us believed we would actually be able to do it without overdubbing backing vocals or anything like that.
That's the most impressive part of this record, knowing that you did it live.
I'm still surprised that was able to happen. I mean, you know, and I think if we had tried to do any of our previous records this way, we wouldn't have been able to make the record that you know, we'd finally come to the point as a band where we could make.
Yeah.
And you know, be able to go in and do the backing vocals and the lead vocals all live. And when I listened back to the early mixes of them, I was surprised that, you know, I was really impressed with all my bandmates, you know, hearing them back. I knew that they were good, but I was like, wow, I didn't know they were that good.
No one but shadows awaits behind the door. They crouch in sight. Why do they hide? I know what they are. No one but shadow has trampled these floorboards since Lord knows when. Oh, will it again? For Lord knows how long. Their faces are obscured. Why do they follow for? Dark arms reach out, circling about my weary shoulders. So strange to see them sway, their dark legs in the day. But when they're gone and I'm all alone, I miss those shadows.
That's Shadows from the Vinegar Creek constituency on Around the Wood Stove. That song comes from the band's latest album, Don't Go Back in Time, that was released in January. I'm talking to frontman Leo DeSanto about the album and inspiration behind some of the songs. Here's Leo on the song Imogene Loved a Sailor.
Yeah, that's a song that's really, I mean, you know, all songs, I guess, to the person who wrote them are very personal in some way or other. And that one, for me, is in a pretty direct way. Because around the time I was starting to write the songs for the album, my grandma, whose name was Imogene, who lived out in California, just passed away. And my grandfather, her husband, was a Navy man. He died back in the 80s, and she never remarried. She always just, you know, that was her husband, and she just, you know, went on as a single woman for the rest of her life. And this song really, people talk about, you know, the Greeks had the concept of the muses who would whisper in the ears of poets and writers and things, and that was a song where I just sat down with my guitar and the title Imogene Loved a Sailor, and the entire thing came into my head in about 5 minutes, almost as though, you know, whispered from somewhere else. So it's kind of a special song. I got to play it for my family when I went up there for her funeral and everything, and they all appreciated it. So and I've gotten a lot of good feedback on it from a lot of people, so that's one of my favorite tracks, I think.
Oh, come look at the ocean with me, Imogene. Eyes flashing like mirrors of blue. The moon in her orbit will dance with the tide, but I will dance only with you. See how the seabirds are born on the waves. How can they seem so unafraid? Adrift on that hungry black deep and unknown, where ghosts take the sail. for even the dead wouldn't wander alone, nor would I wander without you.
At the Wood Stove House, we look forward to staying connected with you. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter under the handle Wood Stove House. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or sign up to get all of the Wood Stove House blog posts and podcast episodes delivered straight to your mailbox. Visit woodstovehouse.com and check the right-hand column for your options to stay in touch. And now back to the conversation with Leo DeSanto from the Vinegar Creek constituency on Around the Wood Stove. I'd like to hear the story behind Wild Winds of Misfortune. This is the last song on the album, and it's really a departure from the whole album. You know, it sort of changes direction there, but it's also kind of a departure from Vinegar Creek.
Yeah, and it's a kind of song I probably never would have written. You know, it's got that kind of Irish pub drinking song type of vibe, which as much as I enjoy, I'm a huge Pogues fan and things like that, and in more traditional Irish music too, but I never would have thought to write something that blatantly derived from that kind of stuff, except for the influence of Stephen Courtney, who a lot of people around here know, songwriter and does children's music, adults music, really, really charismatic person. And he had contacted me about, he said, I want to do this album with a bunch of different local songwriters, and I want to challenge each one of them to write these kind of archetypal songs, like maybe a sea chanty, an Irish drinking song, you know, we'll each write one of each of these types of songs, and then we'll record them all and have maybe sing each other's songs. And so I kind of felt instantly inspired by that and started writing these lyrics and this music for an Irish drinking song, which became Wild Winds of Misfortune. I don't know, you know, Stephen's a busy man. I don't know if he ever made that album. I never heard anything more about it, but I thank him for the inspiration for the song. I sent it to him, and he was like, all right.
Oh, I recall a pal of mine when I was a lad of nine, cheerfully oblivious of good fortune that was mine. Sausage on the table and a blessing on the day, and the wild winds of misfortune only whispers far away. Oh, I recall a pal of mine when I was 17, the wild winds of misfortune played like pipers in the reeds, songs of wretched souls who looked for solace in their cups, and sang beneath the street lamp to keep from throwing up. So here's to long goodbyes, boys, and here's to one another, dearer to the heart and ever nearer to the gutter. So grab your ass and hoist your glass, and how the hell have you been? To the wild winds of misfortune blows back to town again.
It's Wild Winds of Misfortune by Vinegar Creek constituency on Around the Wood Stove. I'm talking with the band's guitarist and lead vocalist, Leo DeSanto, about their latest album, Don't Go Back in Time. On this album, on the previous albums, you were the primary songwriter. I know Jeff has always contributed a song or two here and there, but on this album, it's a lot more of a band record.
Yeah, that's another really cool thing about it. I mean, I think it's more of a, I think it's a record that represents our band well in almost every way, in that A, you're hearing us play by ourselves with no guest musicians, which is a first time on a record, be completely live, and see 4 out of 5 members of the band contributed original songs to this record. The majority of them were still written by me. Jeff has, I believe, 3 songs on this one, and then our banjo player Mark has a great banjo tune that always brings down the house when we do it live. I mean, it's really high energy. It's, you know, people go crazy for this song, called Bradledge Breakdown. And then Pete, our fiddle player, has a great kind of classic-sounding fiddle-type square dance type of tune that he wrote for his wife called Banjo Valentine that also was a really good addition to the record. So, it's very cool that everybody had songs on the record that way.
That's Banjo Valentine by the Vinegar Creek constituency on Around the Wood Stove. I'm talking today with Vinegar Creek frontman Leo DeSanto. Leo has been a musician all of his life and now spends a lot of time on the road playing shows wherever and whenever he can. I asked Leo why he makes music.
For whatever reason, and that reason is constantly turning around like a prism, and I'm constantly seeing a different... I ask myself this oftentimes too, and the answer changes, or at least mutates to some degree. But I guess the most consistent core answer I can give is because I have to. I don't know exactly why I have to, but it's kind of just something that's always been there in some form or other. I've heard different touring musicians, especially because, you know, there's a lot of difficulty being on the road, say, if there's anything else you can possibly do and be happy, go ahead and do something else. And, you know, maybe someday when I'm older there will be, but as of now, for me, it's the only game there is, and so I'll just keep playing it.
Well, thanks for taking a few minutes to come down and talk about this new Vinegar Creek record.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's nice talking.
Good luck with everything, with the record and the tour, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Catch Leo DeSanto performing solo on Friday, March 1st at the Ware Center in downtown Lancaster from 6 to 8 p.m. as part of the Lancaster First Friday Performance Series. And the full band will be back in the area on Friday, March 8th at the Burning Bridge Tavern just over the river to the west in Wrightsville, Pennsylvania. Find details about these shows and all of the news about the Vinegar Creek constituency and Leo DeSanto at vinegarcreek.com. You can also link up from the show post on our website, woodstovehouse.com. While you're there, you can check out past episodes of this program or leave a few bucks in the tip jar to help us do what we do. If you like what you hear, please drop a comment on the show post, give us a good rating on iTunes, and be sure to tell your friends about the show. Around the Wood Stove was produced at the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. You can find us online at woodstovehouse.com.